So I'm hoping that in one way today we can relax into thinking that this doesn't matter at all. It's just a nice old story that we're telling. I'm hoping you that we feel that way on one way, just so we fool ourselves into relaxing, so that we can think better. We will spend much of today looking at a couple of just examples of what one could call ritual or worship. If you ask me what's the difference between those two words, I'll just say this is one of many things I don't understand. That is, I think those words, I'm going to use them more or less interchangeable, worship and ritual. I do know that we're in a sort of a Protestant territory here, and so Protestants usually think that ritual is somehow sinister and not what somebody else is telling them to do. If that's not the case, then that will help us, because I think of ritual as a fairly neutral category, a neutral word to describe things that most human beings do. And today we'll give some examples, two primary examples of what people have done in the past, not because they're particularly important, but partly in one case because they are interesting in and of themselves and help us relax into what ritual and worship might be, and one because it's it will be about the beginnings of Christianity for its better and its worse. By and large, those of you who have been with me before know that I talk for a little bit and then stop and ask you to talk for a little bit. In other words, we will, throughout this hour, we'll be hearing me suggest some things, tell some stories, and then ask for your thoughts and questions, and then go on to some more. We'll do that about three times. To be clear, I am not asking you to just go on and on, but I'm asking you to think with everybody here about the important thoughts and questions you're having as we go together. I simply don't work well enough unless I'm getting you the best and most important things that you need to be thinking about in the middle of my talking. I'm really good at cutting you off, and that's not because I think what you're saying is stupid. But mainly because I think there will be some other ways to get at that. But so please talk and then risk having me interrupt you. Mm-hmm. Tomorrow we will be having a second time in which we're going to look at the last 150 years of American worship and what has turned out to be a fairly cataclysmic decline and in American worship over the past 60 years. And to try to think about that. Why has, in the last 60 years, slowly and now quickly, most people in our culture decided it's not worth it? And then on Monday, I'm going to be bringing a bunch of examples for people who are working on ritual and worship in very creative ways in the last 25 years. So that's kind of the overview. Start then with, I'm going to show you some pictures, here we go. Hope that worked. There we go. So I wanted to and this is the first thing that I've given you notes on. This is basically, I'm going to talk about what is a pre-Christian Northern European late winter festival. And that is an amazingly powerful worship and ritual over probably 2,500 or more years in Northern Europe. It's still going on now. You may not think of it as worship, but I'll tell you, 2,500 years ago, they knew it was. And I first want to just tell you this. So this is a picture from last year in the Swiss town of Basel, Switzerland. And this is very characteristic of Scandinavian and of Germanic cities and towns that in late winter. In Basel, there are probably about 150,000 people that look like this for 6 days, wandering around the street. Beautiful costumes, crazy looking things. And so basically the entire town of a little bit over 700,000 people takes off and goes wandering around the streets playing music, either watching people in these crazy outfits or having them themselves. So I'll just show you some more pictures. More of these people. Basically, you should probably think clown. But if you are scared at the clown, you're on the right track. So these characters walking around the street by the thousands are both funny and scary. Hundreds, often thousands of people are in the street walking. If they don't have costumes, sometimes they do. They have made all of these lanterns, and they're walking around with lanterns. I'll tell you a little bit about that in a little bit later. Although what I want you to think about in this case, first of all, when you saw the lanterns, what is Northern Europe in late winter like? Dark, right? Dark and cold. Yeah, cold was right as well. Here, more people. More lanterns. This is a very standard. So the people usually with flutes and drums will, in small groups, just walk the entire city. The objective is simply to keep walking and keep playing music. You'll see this, for instance, often one person going around drumming. This probably would be, I would guess, at 7 in the morning, and this person, he or she, has been walking all night playing drums. You see what this character has in front of her or him? Confetti! Almost everybody in the city has big bags of confetti, and they're throwing it at each other. I've been in this particular situation, and here in Basel, this is true of a lot of them, one of the main things that the people with confetti do, with costumes or not, so this person back here who doesn't have a costume on may be throwing the confetti, but I have seen the mayor of Basel be confettied when he just walks down the street everywhere. This is one of the scary and funny things, because this is like mock violence. By the way, hardly anybody is drinking. Mostly the foreigners. Yeah. here again, characters. These, when I teach a course on this, I look at the costumes. The costumes are all handmade and made. I mean, nobody's buying the costumes. That you make them, and they're about current events. And almost all about Swiss or German or Swedish current events. So in the same place where people are walking around, you see them all walking around, the teenagers have their role. And the teenagers have these big, huge wagons. Oh, at least as big as this centerpiece. They're made of metal. And they're made of metal, and on top of, in the wagons, about as high as the second tier up here, is full of wood. They light those wagons on fire with wood and pull them slowly through the middle of town, with people roaring. I like you telling you this because most of you may have never heard of this, right? And millions of people are doing it. And they've been doing it for 2,500 years. All right, that's. We'll just leave them, let them wander around for some more time. Okay, so this came out of Europe in the north a long time ago, as I said, and it's grown and grown and grown. Any thoughts about why people would do this in the middle of winter? To cheer themselves up is a really important answer, isn't it? That's not going to be the only answer. But if you have, I mean, I've lived in Northern Europe for years, and if you have to go through winter in Northern Europe, something needs to cheer you up. Other thoughts for why
is
these people...
A place of community? Place of community?
Slice of community, yeah. I mean, community is probably almost the small word. I mean, because this is like a society. I mean, these are thousands of people that do this together. So it's sort of community. And the people are very friendly all the time to each other. All right, well, let me tell you what the people who have studied this. Did you have...
Togetherness,
right? Yeah.
Frighten away winter.
Frighten away winter. Bingo. Really, really important. If you think kind of mythically about this, everything people have said so far is right. But one of the things is basically we will do anything if the winter will only stop. We'll dress up as crazy as we can. We'll dress up with our nightmares. We'll dress up with our dreams. We'll dress up with the bad thing that happened in our society. We'll dress up with anything. We'll confetti each other just to get inside each other. And to make each other laugh. One of the big things when they make their processions is they have all of these brass bands. And the brass bands are always played off key. So you'll see hundreds of people walking down playing the brass bands off key. We'll do anything if only it'll be warm and better. And can you feature, is it? It's really scary, they say inside themselves. I think I may go crazy this winter. Because it's just so hard to keep doing this. Okay, so what I'm wanting to suggest is that this is worship, and this is ritual. It is if everything is on the line and you don't know the answer. And you'll see in the titles I've given these three conversations this weekend that I'm pointing towards energy, pointing towards emotions, and awe. So I'll tell you, if you see a wagon on fire, 15 of them going down the city of your town, you're scared and amazed at the same time, because somehow these teenagers have got it together that it doesn't burn the town down, but it's scary enough. Here I want to suggest that when worship or ritual is doing something for its people, it's letting out a lot of the stops. It's having all kinds of emotions. It's having all kinds of energies in all directions and not a lot of answers. It's engaging in the thing that's happening with all its might, with all its fear, with all its hopes and dreams. And, you know, just for a moment, think about last time you went to church and how much of that was going on. In other words, I want us to contrast what we think worship has been and is and what it was and is now in all kinds of other societies other than Western. I'm not saying that we are bad at worship in all cases. I've been working at it all my life, and I think there's a lot of really great things going on. And even when we do it badly, sometimes it feels like sometimes we're thinking about someone walking through our town with the wagon on fire. Or a beautiful thing, some person walking up a street alone playing a flute, even if we don't have a flute in our worship. All right, I'm going to stop here. I'd love some protests or thoughts or questions. Yes?
What's the festival called?
Fasnacht is the...
Fasnacht?
Fasnacht. It's a little bit different in most of the German dialects. The Norwegian and the Swedish are a little bit different, and we don't really know what it means. I think, though, in other words, this is not like, so by the way, we in our cultures have this in a derivative and corrupt form. I maybe shouldn't have said corrupt, but I don't know. I'll hold it onto it for a moment. What do people do in late winter in some big cities here?
Mardi Gras.
Mardi Gras. But when you look at us doing Mardi Gras, and I hope there are some New Orleans folks who will correct me on this. But most of the things I know about Mardi Gras now is getting as drunk as you can be. Mm-hmm. And acting like you're a sophomore in college, whether you're my age or not. In other words, this has a little bit of that stuff, but it's now materialized. It's so much about materialistic fears that it's only a vague example. And if, when you go to Europe and see it, these people are kind of interestingly serious and curious at the same time. Yes, John?
I might be getting ahead, but I can't help but think that
maybe has the NFL replaced worship in our, when we look at this, you talk about violence, you talk about all the things, it's like, is that?
I have written three articles on the NFL about its aliveness as worship. I'm not wanting to say it's all good, but I'm wanting to say that people are feeling things like they feel there. And they're, as is the case in our mentality, they're a little bit more drunk than the people are in Europe.
You look at the costumes in the end zone.
Yeah, exactly. This doesn't mean to say let's all go out and do that, but let's notice that in our culture, when churches look so tame, that actually the humankind is out there. Or, and we'll be talking about this tomorrow and on Monday, if you go to rock concerts, and you see the people riding on the top of the wave of the rock concert, you know that this really means something.
Is there a police or security presence
in Europe?
In the festival, yeah.
Oh, hardly any. Well, but there is. They're out. But usually, people are stealing their hats and trying to play keep away from them. Mm-hmm. Hmm. So people relate to the police the same way that they relate to the mayor. In other words, let's sort of let things go for a moment, if anything, because we're just so fed up with it being sad and cold and lost.
So along this thought, but when I think of worship, I think of going towards something. And when I'm thinking of the festivals and such, it sounds like they're going away from something, fear, some untoward event or whatever the case may be. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I know. I think I would say I would tend to want to suggest it's both at the same time. In other words, I think I showed you some really beautiful pictures.
Right.
I mean, people work for 7 months to strut with a beautiful face that may also be a little bit afraid.
Yeah.
Okay, I'd love an argument.
Can I?
Yes, please.
I heard you say everything is on the line and you don't know the answer.
Yeah.
And so I'm trying to put together what I'm hearing you say. I feel like that it's sort of living into the fullness of what people are experiencing, but not necessarily giving them answers or conclusions. Is that correct? What I'm hearing you say?
Yeah. So, I can quote. We will eventually in the next 6 months. Some of us will get to read some the people who. I mean, these are not my ideas. I'm just learning from colleagues. So Jonathan Z. Smith says that what ritual does. Is it gets a body, a social body together to think through the things they don't know the answers to. And by think through, he doesn't mean like write books, but to take a walk in the middle of the city in the middle of the night where it's all peaceful and people are letting down their guard. Yeah, so I think that's a very important hearing that ritual theorists now are saying worship has to do with throwing yourself into what matters emotionally, energetically, and thoughtfully. So, for instance, and the one thing you want to know about worship, when it really gets going, when it's really alive, you don't know what's going to happen. I mean, there are a whole bunch of people who plan their worship really tightly. I was one of them. But actually, the worship that moves one to joy, to sorrow, to hope, that is the kind that has a life of its own. It's not that planning doesn't help. So in other words, putting those costumes together help. Playing off key helps. Taking a walk with music helps. So that someone would plan to do that, that's good. But that everyone would be in lockdown for planning everything about what everybody has to do would probably not help. Oh, I got a little bit more challenge here, please.
Well, worship isn't a noun or a verb. I mean, it sounds like they're doing something, but it's the thing. I always thought worship was about something we don't understand. It's not just about us. It's about God or whatever. It's to stretch ourselves beyond, to acknowledge that we're needy or something. So sometimes we're doing the worship. It's like a verb, but if you're worshiping as a noun, it's different. But.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure if I have anything better to say than what you just said.
Oh.
No, I mean, that really, I want to say you, I think where you are is where all these people are that are authentically doing powerful ritual. And so the noun and the verb thing, I want to say both. But I may not understand exactly that question. What, you want to say a little bit more about whether it's a noun or a verb?
Now I have to think about it.
Okay, good. Well, that's kind of what I was hoping we would be doing. Again, the cool thing about this moment is we have a weekend together to think about this. Or 6 months, or something like that.
Ironically, Lutheranism in America originated from those places you talked about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And to not have brought that or embraced that is kind of an interesting observation, one. And two, I think there are, I'll place myself in this category, are uncomfortable with letting go and not having things controlled and understanding what's to come next and so forth and so on. And so I can see where this doesn't appeal to a lot of people. I shouldn't say a lot, some people.
May I ask this just for sort of a show of hands or hearts? How many of you have been in worship that where you didn't feel like it was in control, and it felt powerfully good, too?
Where you didn't feel like it was in control?
Yeah. Okay. All right. Okay. Yes, please.
But you can also have experiences where it's out of control and it feels powerfully bad.
Yeah. No, and so that's really important to say, because notice that it looks like when humans manage to participate in this in a proactive, energetic way, the out of control is. It's really out of control, to the better and sometimes not the better. But you don't get to the real better in this age unless you risk it.
I was thinking about a service that I was at where the Bethune-Cookman Spiritual Choir of about 150 African-Americans came to our very white, it was a Methodist church at a time, and they just sort of took over the sanctuary. And people were like, oh, no. I mean, people were like worried because lots of stuff was going on in the aisles, down the, but it was really interesting to watch the difference of cultures and that worship experience. Mm-hmm. And they were really in control. Nobody said you're going to go down that aisle and you're going to go down. They just knew that they were participating. So it was really interesting.
And that's so helpful. And I don't want to romanticize this, but I want to say that in African American worship services that I've been in, where people fall out, everybody know what falling out is? I mean, it's a kind of ecstatic experience in which you're not in control of your own body. That I've experienced as wondrous and scary. And that was mostly because I hadn't practiced it. I mean, I didn't know how to relate to something that had that kind of aliveness in it. Okay, I'm going to move on. Since we have this, at least these several days together, please come and say, Hal, I've been thinking about what we're working on, and say this to each other, and this is one of the things I really like, or this is one of the things I really don't like, or these are the questions I have. Because it's much of Western analysis of worship and ritual has been on lockdown, and it has not known how to think about it until about 40 years ago. So we're kind of new at this, thinking about it. I don't want to by that say that that we scholars are hot stuff. I want our conversations to understand that each one of you have a lot of wisdom on this front. If you've hated the church for a long time, you have wisdom about it. If you've loved it for a long time, there's a lot of wisdom in it. Please don't let me pull the scholarly wise guy on you. Please keep your thinking open. I'm going to go on and look at one other place. And I just have two pictures, and they're not in color. So this is, some of you have heard me a little bit on this in other years. I'm going to give you two pictures, they're more or less the same. Where'd it go? I think I'm going to give you one picture. this is a triclinium. There was another triclinium with more of a tri in it. But this is a picture from ancient vases of the Mediterranean, of the Mediterranean way of eating in the Greco-Roman world. That is, people in the first and second centuries, and a little bit before and a little bit afterwards, the way they got together was having a big meal with like 8 to 30 people. And what the name for the word of this meal, which went on for 3 hours, was the reclining. In other words, you were lying down on the job. You were relaxed. What you did was to show that you were relaxed. And you did that partly by eating, drinking, singing together. The interesting thing about that is, please, I know some of you are going to just believe me that I'm totally lying to you, and some of you know that I do lie to you accidentally, but it turns out that the first 200 years of early Christian worship looked like this. I mean, most of us think that in the first several centuries, when the Christians were worshiping, they were worshiping something like we do. But what you need to know is they had a wild drinking, eating, singing, praying festival in small groups. I mean, it's throughout the Bible, and it's all over the place in the texts themselves. So, for instance, I love this. So, when we read in church, and when they were at table, the Greek word is, and when they were lying down. So, in other words, our translations are even wrong to hide from us on some level that this was a party. And not in the way we had of a party. This was often a thoughtful party in which someone would get up and give a talk. And then there was lots of arguing. And there was lots of singing. Lots of drinking. And lots of eating. So here I want to suggest, those of us who are Christian, and I'm glad, I hope some of you are not, those of us who are Christian, this is where our worship began, is in this scene. She's playing the flute. He's getting some drinks ready. He's washing some feet. This one's ready to make a toast. All of these, by the way, are exact off of vases. They're exact pictures. And what I want to suggest is that here, ritual and worship are an embodied event of togetherness that many people said, that's the heart of God being with us. The other thing we need to know about the first and second century, all over the Mediterranean, of course, is so the Christ movements are getting started like this, and the Roman Empire is in control, and so the Romans killed our guy, right? Those of us who have that guy. So Jesus was tortured to death. The thing is that what we know now is it wasn't just Jesus and those two other guys. It was hundreds of thousands of people that the Romans crucified, that they tortured to death. They enslaved from the nations that they captured. They enslaved hundreds of thousands of people, rich people and poor people, and took them to other places where they worked for them. So at the same time as these people are saying, more and more, let's get together and be joyful in the middle of really hard times. So Paul, who tells us all about these stories, he gets worried. He says, you're being too rowdy. I'm not saying whether he's right or wrong. I'm just saying, isn't that like what the feelings we were having about the Fasnacht? The joy's a little too much. Maybe we're a little bit out of control, and maybe some bad things are going to happen. So Paul, who is going around organizing these kind of meetings in new towns, is also a little scared because of the power of the energy, emotions, and joy. Now, some of you know I've written 4 books on this subject, so I won't bore you. Let's ask critical questions about this as a proposal for an example of worship. or just ask questions, or have protest.
So is this more of an upper class only worship, or did every, you have your servants, you have your riches, you have your royals, you have your middle class, like, what does that mean?
I can't, all five questions we've had have been exactly right on. I mean, the such a great thing about talking to people at Holden is we get real questions. And so the answer is, up until about 40 years ago, we thought that it was that these kind of the only evidence we had were mainly from rich people's houses. In the meantime, the archaeologists have just come up big for us, and there are all kinds of paraphernalia that we found real places where the poor people did, and when we looked closer at the New Testament, they were all over the place. And they were mostly poor. So what happened was, this was initially, with the old Greeks, it was a rich people's thing that the poor people took over. And by the way, one of my PhD students, who just wrote a whole book on it, he says that he thinks, I mean, most of us that have been working on this, we think it was a pretty nice meal for poor people. But he says most of them were so poor that they only, and we knew that, you know, they drink, mainly because, of course, it's one of the safest things to drink for health-wise in that time. He says some of them were so poor, all they had was bread. And they ate bread for 3 hours as if it were meat and good vegetables.
Yeah, this is a Greek version of that. How did the, in the early transition to Christianity or to the way, did the Jewish tradition play into that in their form of worship, as well as even paganism? I mean,
They're doing the same thing. There's a matter of fact, one of the first documents we have of a whole bunch of people in northern Egypt doing this to praise God. It's called the Therapeutai. It was a Jewish group doing it in northern Egypt. And the Christians, when they read that for the first time in the 4th century, they said, he's lying, it's us. Okay, so I can turn that off. By the way, I just want to say something that the other slide I was going to show you has the women with clothes on. That one didn't. So what I want to suggest here now is that worship and ritual is a long, long kind of wisdom that comes from the heart of humans. But they've been doing it forever. And as I said in my opening thing, and sort of we've forgotten it, but then, you know, people have to invent football so that we get doing things like that. I don't want to say anything about what's right and wrong about all of this, but I do know that this can turn decadent and can turn holy in the best sense of the word. And so it feels to me as if when any, and I do this a lot in when I'm working with local churches who've lost their way in terms of having a worship service that attracts anybody, and we all know, right, that the Christians in America were going downhill slowly since 1960, and now they're going downhill fast in terms of that. So in as much as one can be relaxed about all these things, and there are plenty of other things not to be relaxed about, I know, but it seems like there is a kind of aliveness to some things that humans end up sort of patching together as a way to be together. A couple of you kept saying, oh, these people are together. And it's true, but they're also risking energy, they're risking emotions, they're risking closeness. In other words, why in the world it's quite clear why one of the scripture lessons about the early Christ people and their meals is, why did they say the body of Christ? Because it was bodily. It was full of bodiness all over the place. People were lying next to each other and proposing a toast to God. One of the things that we will do tomorrow is think about how the American situation is now and has been for a while. And I want to tell you that we're going to talk a lot about new things that are developing as well as things that have been not going well. But here I hope us not to have to think about what churches do, but mainly what humans can do to feel more alive. And that ritual and worship are two of the long-term ways that we know that happens. Yes?
I was just thinking about Holden, because I do all the time. And I was thinking about how some of our Holden rituals, like Sun Over Buckskin and those kinds of things, are really actually like another form of worship. We don't necessarily think of Sun Over Buckskin as worship, but or I had never thought of it that way. Mm-hmm. But we do a lot of those kinds of things together. Mm-hmm. That are ridiculous and emotional and funny and
mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and the
that really are another way for us to be together.
Mm-hmm. The hilarity that is in this institution's DNA is like that. Silliness on one level, profound on another.
Yeah. I've been thinking a lot about Mardi Gras because that's coming up in our community.
I know, and I heard you got a plan.
I know initial Mardi Gras, a lot of the costuming was truly that for one night, or you know, for one period of time, that class lines, because it was such a diverse city, that class right. lines and all that could be masked and everybody would just be one big family. So I'm just wondering about trends and ritual that have that unifying across lines that would other divide. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you're going to be speaking to that.
I don't think this weekend I'll have much shot at that. But yeah, let's stay with that, Melinda, a little bit more. I just think that the way I characterize Mardi Gras has to be wrong on some level. There has to be authentic aliveness still going on there. And just because a whole bunch of other people are invading that for other purposes, when I'm in New Orleans, there's all kinds of really long-term, especially African-American, wisdom of aliveness. Yeah.
And I guess my question is sort of taking that thought of Mardi Gras beyond to just rituals in general, that how is it that we encompass the diversity that's in the room? Because I feel too often, I think the resistance to ritual is that there's sort of this expectation that there's this heart of people that have it right, and the people that come to it have to conform. Mm-hmm.
when really I feel like when it's done well, it embraces the breadth that is in that community.
Yeah. Two things to think with about that is, yes, the possibility of reaching across divides is there are a couple of ritual theorists who study southwestern Africa, and they have all kinds of healing rituals in which the rich people and the poor people get together, the sick people and the well people get together for special times. And they say that produces healing. So, togetherness and especially letting down one's guard between people, it seems like that has part, in as much as worship is sometimes healing, and I don't think it always is even in its best, that would be one thing to say about it. And again, for non-Protestants, ritual is not a dirty word. And I know some of you have some of the really good things that are going on in Lutheranism is to claim some deeper Catholic roots in that regard. So I it feels to me as if we've got to watch ritual. Yeah, because Protestantism has been so defining in America itself. Ritual has become the bad church people that boss you around. And then when you look at the health of Roman Catholicism in so many ways, especially with working class people, there's a lot of relaxing and not near as many words as there is in Protestantism. There's all kinds of meditation. So, I mean, if you look at American Christianity, it's the Catholics who know more about what the Buddhists teach than we Protestants. And that has a lot to do with nobody saying something, you go do that. But so a lot of people saying, in different kinds of Christianity, but I think primarily Catholicism, could you sit over there and just relax for an hour and a half? I mean, I was taught to keep talking.
Right.
Well, I hope we get a chance to talk both inside this session and outside. Thanks a lot for hanging out with me.
Mm-hmm.